Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
This is Salida with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network here. Well, we had, one day off? You hear me yammering for one day? Wow, wonder if that's a good thing. Okay, we know some places it's cold, some places it's warm. Here it's cool, it's real cool for Louisiana for me. Which is, well, not really unusual, but it's different. It gets nice and pretty outside in the daytime, and then at nighttime it's freezing. It's supposed to rain again. It had some beautiful couple of days. Now it's going to rain again. Hopefully it doesn't, but according to the weather, it's supposed to. And I'm hoping the weather there where you're at, if you're cold, I hope you're bundled up safe and sound and next to your computer listening to my voice. Really something to look forward to, huh? Okay. Last time we were on here, that was Saturday evening. Yeah. We had a very interesting conversation. I had callers calling in, and one guy, we went back and forth because I don't think he understood the concept of this book, The Stolen Women, by Dr. Gail Wyatt. I think she's going to really love the idea that I kind of deciphered her book, pulled it down, and talked about it. It's a great discussion. I love this. I love this. I love this. And I love the idea that she was able to explain to us who we are. Now, just to recap just a little bit, I'm not going to go too far back. In the last couple of chapters, we basically broke down, we're in chapter one, I mean the last couple sessions. We talked about the ancient mammy, the permissive stereotype, and we talked about the she-devil. That was the last part. On the she-devil, it got really, really sexual. And we told you the difference between she-devil and mammy's images, romanticized, the caretaker skills, and trustworthy of the black women, and the she-devil is polar opposite. Just as the best rationale for slavery, the sexual urges of Africans and their descendants had to be controlled, so did she become the best revenge. There are a few advantages of emulating the she-devil image. To some women, being seen in a sexual light was preferable to not being seen at all. Being sexy can be empowering. And then it kind of broke down the disadvantage of this image. It says it's like depersonalizes a woman and overemphasizes her sexuality. It is also difficult to care about what happens to evil people or what makes them that way. The woman who models herself on the she-devil image might attract men's attention, but she inspires little empathy, tenderness, or desirability beyond the purely physical pleasures of the moment. And something like that, we had a caller called in, and he was upset, got teed off at me, because he was trying to justify the reason why he was kind of putting women all in the same category as they're not dignified, they're impure, they're not this, they're not that. And all the time, you have to understand, you have to look at each generation of people. You have to look at how did this impact us as a people. And lots of men, and like I told him, since you don't walk in her shoes, you can't make a determination of how she's handling herself and why she's doing the things that she's doing. And because of that, that's why there's probably so much of a disconnect with men and women. We're too busy, quick to judge, and we're not looking at what the person's going through. And that's why it says right here where it depersonalizes us when we act that way, undignified, like he said. You know, he said back in the 70s, you know, they had skanks back in the 70s. There's no difference. They've always had skanks. And I call them skank she devil, whatever you want to call them, but they were always there. There was no need for us not to say that they weren't. They were there then, and they're still here now. And it's because some women have already reserved the self. They've come to the notion that this is where they're going to be, this is how they're going to be. It's hard to change people once they get to that point. And if she's happy with what she does, you know, like I said, you know, sexy was the way of, that's power. And if that was the only way I could get attention, that's what I did. And that's their image, and that's how they see things. Some people you just can't change. Some people are comfortable in what they do, and you can't change them. But I don't say that I can't love them and I have to throw them away because they choose not to be the way that I want them to be. And that's the problem we have with our people. We want to control them, tell them what to do, treat them like they want to treat, you know, and don't give them the benefit of the doubt. And that's what hurts us as a people. We'll be ready to work with the other color and let them do us like crap. But when it comes to our people, we don't want to stand up and take care of them or help them out. So me and him just didn't jive. The other one of the other callers that called in, that he was very cordial, which I really appreciate, and I explained to him his, when he made a statement, I explained to him why it was. Okay, let's move on to the workhorse. It says, finally, there's an image of the workhorse. This is breaking down the images that people, society, see black women. It says, she is the woman who, through hard, back-breaking work, developed useful skills. She excels. Her work ethic contradicts stereotypes that she is lazy. The workhorse was thought to be so strong that she could tolerate rape or physical abuse. Because she could rebound, people assumed that nothing bothered her. Women who embody this stereotype represents what Zora Neale Hurston described as the mules of the world. Many women have aspired to this image in order to avoid feeling vulnerable and powerless or dependent on men who could not always protect them. While the advantage of this image is that a woman might be accepted for her ability rather than for her caretaking or sexual skills, the disadvantage is that she is perceived as hard, unfeminine, and masculine, which is one of the words the young man used yesterday. I mean, day before yesterday. A woman sometimes had to overlook her own feelings in the process of appearing strong. In part, she's also represented in the more contemporary image of Sapphire. Picture her rocking back on her heels with her hands on her hips. Nobody messed with her, but of course nobody wanted her either. That's okay. She didn't need a man. She didn't need anybody. The image of the workhorse also lives on the new stereotype of the well-dressed executive black woman who, though educated, well-spoken, salaried, and housed, presumptively goes home childless and alone. Another hybrid is found in the image of today's girl who dressed as gangsters or hip-hoppers in baggy masculine clothing that does not reveal their feminine curves. They presumptively rejected their femininity in favor of being tough, streetwise women who can kick ass as well as any guy. That is the price of respectability, sacrificing their sexuality to behave the way people who matter to them expect them to behave. Society's expectations can be powerful, controlling forces, particularly if we come to accept them, and to an astonishing degree, we do. Okay. Now, I'm going to say this about me, and I think that's a very good description. I'll be honest with you. I love this description. I love it simply because it reminds me of me. It does. I can relate to the workhorse. I can definitely relate to the workhorse. And not the part about the feminine. Excuse me. I'm sorry, you guys. And I'm not talking about the part where she wears the baggy pants and masculine. I'm talking about the upper part, about the hardworking. You know, she's accepted a lot of stuff that she shouldn't accept in her life, but she does in order to appear like she's strong. So, yeah. Okay. Now, what do others, this next section says, what do others think of us? What do we think of ourselves? Which I think is great. But, okay. Like all stereotypes, the ones I've just described are based partly on incomplete information, but basically on prejudicial notions about a group. They are passed along through various means, by casual conversation, random observations, poorly conducted research, or the media in both subtle and non-subtle, not-so-subtle ways. When repeated, seen, or heard frequently, they become increasingly credible and receive additional confirmation. Soon, if enough people give voice to these beliefs, others assume that they must be true. Years ago, people began asking me questions about black women's sexuality to determine whether the information they had was consistent with my research. Some of their perceptions and statements were so astounding and so stereotypical that I began to collect them. For 10 years, I kept a list, adding similarly outrageous statements that I found in the scientific literature. Then I developed a survey to see whether black and white women were familiar with these statements and found out which ethnic group they thought they best described. Now, if there was much stereotyping of black sexuality as I thought there was, I expected many of the statements to be applied, many of the statements to be applied to us. I also expected many of the statements to be exhibit some negative sexual stereotypes as well. I asked all of the women interviewed to respond to the following statements. Each statement corresponds to a dominant stereotype that has characterized black women for hundreds of years. In describing a workhorse, a woman who values performance and achievement and defers her sexual needs and who might have a very limited notion of what sex should be like, statements like these were made. Some women think that sex is to have babies and not for enjoyment. Some women should be virgins before marriage. Some women don't believe in partner swapping. Some women don't engage in group sex or orgies. Some women use complaints like headaches to avoid sex. Some women think oral sex is unacceptable and degrading. For the she-devil, the highly sexualized woman who has no morals and deserves what she gets, these statements were typical. Some women have babies to receive financial support like welfare. Some women prefer their man to have a large penis. Some women are more sexually responsive than others. Some women are more promiscuous than others. Some women are better lovers than others. Some women use sex to get what they want. Some women are more frequent victims of rape than others. For the mammy, the asexual woman who places other before herself and uses weight to mask her sexuality, the following statement was considered appropriate. Some women have large buttocks and big legs. An overwhelming majority, 85% of the women I asked, had heard these statements before. When I asked where they had heard them, they said from parents, school, loved ones, the church, and less surprisingly, the media. Friends were the most likely source of these sexual stereotypes, with one exception. As expected, the most common sources of the she-devil stereotypes were television, movies, books, and magazines. I asked African-American women which ethnic group they felt best fits the 14 stereotypical statements. Their answers were even more consistent than I had expected. The majority believe that all of these statements apply to the African-American women. In contrast, the white women interviewed felt that these statements could have applied to an ethnic group other than blacks or whites or to women in general. There was, however, an exception, one exception. They were in agreement with their black peers that the statements about having large buttocks and big legs applied only to the African-American. Excuse me, you guys, I am so sorry. We're going to take a break and we shall return.
They become frozen. But the people who take action are far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Call this free government program for the option that's right for you.
Information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your P-I-E-C-E Network.
Bye.
You guys, we are back. As you can see, that was the Marvelettes. We heard a little Jean Knight with Mr. Big Stuff. And also, you guys, tomorrow, before I go any further with it, tomorrow, January the 8th at 7 p.m., we will have the author Jacqueline Steward on the show, and she will be talking, discussing her book, Gossip, The Intent to Kill. Great book. I really, really enjoyed it. I was looking for more out of it, but I was just like, man, this could keep going and keep going and keep going. And she also has another book, and I hadn't finished reading that one, but the one we're going to discuss tomorrow night is Gossip, The Intent to Kill. So stay tuned for us tomorrow, you guys. Now, let's see. She said that she was finishing up. Miss Dr. White was doing a survey. And we talked about the findings, and let's see where I want to go with this. Okay, trying to figure out. I asked for an answer. Their answers were even more consistent than, okay. I'm trying to figure out where that was. Okay. It says, these findings highlighted the degree to which African-American women have internalized and accepted statements that depict them as stereotypical characters. It seems that these black women agreed with any statement about themselves, even if the statements themselves are contradictory. Some of them depict black women as deferring sex, and others depict them as highly sexualized. Obviously, these women found both the black horse, the black workhorse, and the she-devil to be credible images. Who was more likely to accept these statements? Women who were younger, born after 1960, were slightly more likely to have heard them, but age did not influence whether they agreed with them. I anticipated that women with more education and higher incomes would reject these statements for what they are. Assumptions that are based on incomplete information and prejudicial attitudes. That was not the case. However, women who were educated or more affluent were just as likely as less educated, poor women, to accept these statements as true of being black women. It appears that regardless of age, education, and income, black women endorse these statements as characteristic of black women. In essence, we do believe what people say about us, and white men are not the only culprits. Other women, our parents, our friends, and of course the media all play a part in making these stereotypes seem credible. Younger women or adults who have not yet developed a sense of themselves that is strong enough to withstand the influences of negative stereotypes frequently attempt to emulate them. These women might dress and behave like the images they see, or like those that are marked to appeal to subgroups in the black community, including the hip-hop girls, the gangster rappers, female gang members, groupies who hang with entertainers or sports figures, or starlets who want to be discovered by the entertainment industry. Or they may stay at home watching the soaps or talk shows, living vicariously through others, and functioning in caretaking capacities in their families, assuming such responsibility as cooking or caring for children or ailing family members. They may be marginal students and have very little social life outside of home and church. More than 20 years ago, I had a client who had, okay. So, as you can see, these women might dress and behave. They were talking about how they stereotype us and how we find ourselves falling into what society sees us to be, which not all the time is good, not for us. Okay? see. I apologize for that. My sleepiness, because I don't know why I'm sleeping. I'm really not. Is yawning. Sometimes they say it's the way that you sit makes you yawn. So if I sit straight up with my back against the chair, maybe I won't yawn. But if you slump yourself, you make yourself feel relaxed, too relaxed, and you think you've got the ready to go to sleep. But I am not ready to go to sleep just yet. Okay, let's move on to invisible chains. We talked about the stereotypical woman, how people perceive us, how we perceive ourselves, which is very bad. And now we're going to talk about invisible chains. Think of many ways in which sexual stereotypes are still dramatized in the media. My favorite example is the movie Colors. It depicts the lives of two policemen, played by Robert Duvall and Sean Penn, trying to contain gang involvement in the Black and Latino community. The movie caused quite a stir in the Black community, but the controversy focused on how gangs and violence were portrayed rather than on how sexually stereotyped behavior was promoted. This film has one of the most racist sexual scenes that I can recall in several decades. It shows a Black woman and man engaging in very loud, animated, and continuous sex even while the police watched. These two people, the Buck and the She-Devil, were heavily engrossed in their animalistic methods of sexual pleasure in the middle of the day. The scene says it all. Neither had the sense to lock the door of their very messy, rundown home, and both were obviously not working and were too distracted by sex to notice several men standing in the doorway. The couple doesn't seem very intelligent, and no morals or priorities interfered with their sexual pleasures. This scene brings to mind the exploitation era of the 1970s in its volume of movies that continually portrayed men and women as sexually impulsive, aggressive, and violent. Dr. Alvin Poussaint, the noted Harvard psychiatrist who has been a consultant on many media projects that promote positive images of African-American family life, wrote about the changes in roles assigned to Blacks from the 1920s to the 1970s. According to Poussaint, the same insidious message is there. Blacks are violent, criminal, sexy savages who imitate the white man's way as best they can from their disadvantaged sanctuaries in the ghetto. These same negative images have simply been reborn in contemporary images in the media. So what she's trying to say is nothing's changed. It's still the same. They still see us as this. The Blacks are criminals. The women are full of sex and just want to jump on and have sex with anybody. We're sexual savages, sexy savages, criminals. We believe in violence. And this is how we live, and this is what she's saying, how we continue to perpetuate that same role and consider invisible chains. A few years ago, I was on Our Voices on Black Internet, BET, where I engaged in a lively discussion with Shiraz Ali, Shiraz Ali, who had written a book that was meant to teach Black men how to treat Black women. Her book was filled with stereotypical characteristics of the She-Devil and suggested coercive methods such as slapping to manage or control women's supposedly crafty and manipulative tendencies. Obviously, some Black women share the responsibility for promoting these stereotypes. They are entitled to their opinion, but the problem is that they endorse physical abuse, perpetuate the ideal that Black men cannot trust Black women and breathe new life into the old stereotypes. Writer Joan Morgan delineates another example of this phenomenon in a 1997 article in Essence magazine, quoting the lyrics of a song by a hip-hop rapper, Da Brat. And this is what she said. With 50 grand in my hand, steady puffing on a blunt, sipping Hennessy and Coke, give you what you want. It is obvious that the relentless pursuit of status, power, and ducats is not gender-specific, as evidenced by the willing complicity of not only these rappers, but also upteen scantily clad video hoes, sisters, who are going to get theirs by any scandalous means necessary. Rather than grant them victim status, I suggest we start holding them accountable. Now, we're going to take another break here, and we shall return. And this is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita.
Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiecenetwork. That's sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiece, P-I-E-C-E, network.
much more than hope to bring you close. I think I'll pray. I hear you say you've got a lot to give up, and there is so much more this heart of mine can take. If what you have to bring to me is positive, you send it right on.
Listen in tomorrow, January the 8th, at 7 o'clock, we will have Jacqueline Stewart on here discussing her book, Gossip, The Intent to Kill. I think it will be an awesome, awesome, awesome interview with her. So I'm really looking forward to that. All right. Now, let's talk about, let's see, go down. Okay, it says, it is quite possible that stereotypical threat operates in fashion similar to sexual practices, as images of sexually irresponsible and impulsive women are presented consistently for many decades. We might indeed anticipate that a stereotyped acceptance would result. That is, one's sexual behavior might be altered to fit the stereotype. If this is plausible, does it mean that the media and others are invested in further distorting African American female sexuality? The media I described certainly offer credible evidence of this possibility. But we cannot expect other people to reject these images if we don't actively protest the media's persistent focus on the worst rather than the best of us. More important, we have to take some responsibility for the worst. According to an African proverb, if you know your history, you will know your future. The racist descriptions of Africans in the 16th century are strikingly familiar. The negative stereotypes of the past are the negative stereotypes of today. Some of us manage to ignore them, but the most disturbing fact in this chapter is that the average black woman believes them and may even think that they provide a standard for her sexual behavior. My research just demonstrated the discrepancies between the stereotypes and the reality and attempts to correct assumptions that have become deeply entrenched in this society. But it also reveals that stereotypes exert a continuous and insidious force on our sexual self-image. True images of African-American women are ill-defined, partly because our sexuality has been so distorted by our history and so poorly understood, and partly because some of us are actually satisfied with these stereotypes and want to mold ourselves and everyone else to fit these images. But the woman who exaggerates or avoids her sexuality and avoids others to simplify or stigmatize, it eventually finds herself paying the unnecessary price of a continued sexual slavery as one more stolen woman. What do I mean by the characterization, stolen woman today? Number one, they are still captive to stereotypes and don't understand that African Americans have a culture that does not endorse everything acceptable or promoted in the mainstream America. Number two, the stolen woman of today believes that what other people think of them is true. Stolen women of today, three, do what other people want them to do regardless of the consequences to themselves. Stolen woman number four, let their bodies define who they are, and defend and then excuse others who reduce them to stereotypes. They reject the right to be free. I've talked to hundreds of stolen women, and you know what? As I was reading this, I was visualizing these women, what the stolen woman looks like today. And I'm going to tell you, Facebook is a great thing, and then it's a bad thing. But what I've learned on Facebook, everything that this lady, this doctor has said just now, is exactly how we're visualized on Facebook, including myself. And I'm going to say why. We want everybody to see the best of us. We want them to visualize or even fantasize, whether we want to admit it or not, we want them to fantasize on how we look. So if you notice that a lot of the girls, it's not all young girls, it's older ones too, that like to put their breasts on there, who likes to put their butt on there, you know, they want to, you to see all that. Let me say this, and if you go on my Facebook page, you go into my photos, you might see that kind of thing. I got a picture of me in a bathing suit from back in the day, and I have a picture of, actually, it's a cover of my book with my legs up in the air. Because I'll say this, I'm very proud of my legs, and that's the reason why I did that pose. But it's not, I'm not making excuses. I might as well say it. I'm including me in this because we want people to accept us for the beauty on the outside. We are gorgeous, beautiful people on the outside, but majority of the time we are hurting on the inside. A lot of us is lonely, and a lot of us, Facebook is the only connection we have to the world. We don't want to admit that, but it is. To a lot of people, Facebook is the only connection outside of their world. So it does a lot for people, and then it doesn't do so well. You know, you have people put up pictures of us fighting each other and acting a fool and the cussing, the you know, you're doing just exactly what they say we are. We continue, like she says, perpetuate this whole stereotypical of the black woman. And we have to stop that. Okay. She says, I have talked to hundreds of stolen women during my career. From time to time, I have felt as if I had been stolen too. And that's exactly what I feel. Analyzing my professional and personal experiences have led me to the conclusion that if we sincerely want to be free from the invisible chains of history and stereotypes, we have to be willing to free ourselves. That process begins with the fundamental recognition that we could even be stolen women today. No one has ever described this concept more poignantly than Harriet Tubman when she said, I freed thousands of slaves. I could have freed thousands more if they had known they were slaves. That is awesome. I believe that every African-American woman can benefit from stretching her mind and patiently examining the critical years of her sexual development for evidence of the invisible chains that could be binding her to distorting stereotypes, images, messages, and experience. Those were the years when she was setting the template for her adult sexuality. What she did, her behaviors and decisions, was what communicated her by others, their messages, and what she was forced to do all converged to shape her sexual being. That means we need to know which of our behaviors were healthy and which were not. We need to reevaluate the messages we heard as we were coming of age. We need to consider how factors such as our economic status, our parents' involvement, exposure to abuse, or other social and psychological issues may have made a difference. We also need to see our experiences in a broad cultural context. Discovering the patterns of sexual development that we share as African American women will give each of us a wealth of specific clues to the rules, the role that cultural values and expectations play in our personal development. It will also help us locate the line where our culture may have stopped condoning our actions and where destructive stereotypes started to determine our ideals about the way black women were supposed to either be or be perceived. Let's begin the journey to understanding. Wow. That's awesome. So we're finished with part one already. Awesome. Definitely awesome book. We're not going to do every page and we're not going to do every chapter, but I thought that was very, 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 very enlightening. So, we've covered a lot of ground about African American women and how we see ourselves, where we started from, where we need to go, and how we need to start this journey on understanding what happened. What happened to us? And where do we go from there? I'm trying to, go back to make sure. Let's kind of recap a little bit. But before we do that, I want to, I have to throw a song in there on you. And I think it's so appropriate.
Still raising the night silence in her ears.
gentle flower, grow wild. If by chance I should hold her, let me hold her for all time. If I love just one possession, I would pick them from the garden. You be mine.
Try to continue this and hopefully be finished by maybe the 18th or sooner. Because like I said, I'm just going to pick and choose stuff out of there until then to we'll talk about. Then the next book we're going to discuss, I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be awesome. Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Church. It's Sexual Misconduct in African American Churches. Donald H. Matthews, Ph.D. And I get you guys like so much. She's always talking about sex. Because you guys, if you listen to what I was saying about in Stolen Women, that's where all of this connects. This is where all this connects at, and this is why it's very important that we know this. I got a chance to interview this guy who wrote, the author of the book, very nice guy, who wrote this book, and he really, really said some things that was really, to me, I mean, really hit the point. But we're going to discuss it as a group on here. And really, please, feel free to call in. I think it's going to be an awesome time when we get on that book. So just tomorrow, feel free tomorrow to call in as we're talking and help us discuss and interview Ms. Jacqueline Stewart. You guys, I think I'm running out of time. So what I want to say is I want to thank you guys for tuning in to the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. If you're interested in hosting the show, you can contact us on sensible64.wix.com/SayYourPeace, PIECE Network. And I want to say good night.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned for more.